words of Bo Mitchell, "Wake up, Denver." This is You Get the Blessing.
Well, East Coast girls are hip, I really dig those styles they wear. And the Southern girls with the way they talk. They
little tribute to the Beach Boys this morning, celebrating their 50th anniversary, but we like Colorado girls personally, especially our wives. Well, good morning. This is You Get the Blessing, and normally Bo Mitchell would be introducing the show. I'm his co-host, Bob Belts, and Bo is not able to be with us today, but I have our good friend, Chuck King, that is sitting there in Bo's chair. And Chuck, glad to have you with us this morning.
I'm happy to be, Bo. He said, I don't have to say anything because you've got the Bible memorized.
Right. Well, he told me that, you know, that you were supposed to talk a lot just to keep me from saying anything about the Bible. No, not really. We could make a lot of fun of our buddy Bo, but he always does a great job here, and we're going to miss him. But I'm glad you're here because, you know, Chuck, for those of you that don't know, is a professor at Colorado Christian University and has quite a history, was an FBI agent, and was actually the dean of the business school at CCU. So, Chuck, you've done a lot of great things, and again, one of our speakers at Narrowgate and good friend. So,
well, I've been in search of a career most of my life. So
we have a great show today, by the way.
Exciting.
And I'm looking forward to hearing from our guest, and I'll let you introduce him.
Skip Starr.
Good morning.
Skip has a ministry called Shining Star Ministries.
Yes, sir.
And I think the best way to introduce you, Skip, is to let you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
I'll be glad to do that. I was born in South Dakota, oldest of six boys, raised primarily in Michigan. When the Republicans were in office, we were in Washington, D.C. When the Democrats were in office, we were in Michigan. And raised in Michigan, went to University of Michigan, drafted after my sophomore year in college, joined the ROTC so I could finish college, did three tours in Nam. By then, my family had moved to Omaha, Nebraska, went there, got a law degree. I majored in accounting and economics at Michigan, got a law degree, senior year of law school. I started my first bank, ended up partnering with my brother, who was a year younger than me, who was an attorney, and we started a couple more banks. Then my dad came in, and we ended up owning banks in Iowa, Kansas, Colorado, Nebraska.
Sounds like a great success story.
Oh, success from a materialistic standpoint, yes. So,
now, I know we're getting to a turning point in that story, but before we get there, tell us a little bit what it was like growing up in your family, and, you know, was faith a piece of that, or is that something that came later in your life?
My mom, we grew up in the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is, if you know the history of the Mormon Church at all, when Joseph Smith died, Brigham Young went to Utah. There was a small group that stayed in Independence, and that was that group, which was headed up by Joseph Smith's son. And my mom had been raised by her parents in that religion, and my mom, small church, my mom was the piano player, the organ player, the lead singer. So we spent a lot of our life at church. My dad was a workaholic. Hardly ever saw my dad. He also, I didn't realize it till I was in high school, but he also had numerous affairs on my mom, and that was one of the reasons he was gone all the time. So I really helped my mom raise my five younger brothers because he provided. We never needed anything. I mean, he was a very successful man, and I had a great life that way. And religion, as I turned to business, especially after coming back from Vietnam, it wasn't part of my life.
All right. Great. So now we're back up to speed where you're finishing law school, University of Nebraska. Is that where
No, I went to Creighton Law School in Omaha.
Great.
And then started the banks, joined my dad and my brother joined with me. And then in 1969, my brother died in an automobile accident. in 91, my father died. So suddenly I had my mother and my four brothers as my partners, and that didn't work too well, though most of my brothers worked for me. So I liquidated everything. Financially, didn't have a care in the world, but played around for a couple years. During that time, I had been married and divorced, married for 15 years. My wife, I met her in California while I was in the military, and was a great wife, loved to party, great entertainer, really was an asset to me as I was rising up in the business world. But during some hard times in the late 80s in the banking business, where we had to sell a couple of our vacation homes and put money back in the banks and so on, and it was my fault because she was in need of stuff, and my business was demanding, and I chose the business over her, and I blame myself to this day for that. But we divorced, never had any children. But then as things started getting better again, I was on the board of directors of Boys Town in Omaha, and the father French there came to me and said there was a young boy there that needed a mentor. Would I mentor him? And at Boys Town, they had a home that was like for 300 boys. And every year, I would buy them all a Christmas present. On their birthday, I would buy them a birthday present. I'd let them take them up to my home in Breckenridge to go skiing. I'd let them use my boat on the lake. So I got to, most board members are to raise money. That's why you're on a board. And I did that, but I got to know a lot of the kids.
We need to tell our board members at Highline that that's what board members are supposed to be doing.
Okay. So
if you're listening out there this morning, guys.
And so I ended up over a period of time being a mentor foster parent to 9 troubled teenage boys. And today, fortunately, I have 13 grandkids by those 9 boys. But
that's great.
But after my dad and my brother had died and I'd sold everything, traveled a lot, spent a lot of time with my foster sons, taking them all over the country, I decided I just wasn't wealthy enough and got heavy into real estate and construction, owned several commercial and residential real estate development companies and construction companies, had a lot of partners, brought in a lot of partners, invested heavily in real estate in the foothills. The Hayman fire hit. Values dropped. I was heavily leveraged. Instead of just admitting that I was going to go broke, transferred funds between different partnerships with different partners, committed fraud. Partners lost a significant amount of money. And I was facing 94 years in prison.
94?
94, yes, sir. And so I went to a good friend of mine that was my attorney, that was a criminal defense attorney, Steve Newell, great guy.
I know Steve Newell.
Yeah, he's a great man.
He's actually helped our family in some tough times.
Yeah. And he helped several of my foster sons, so that's how I knew him. Yeah. And I told him the situation, and I said, look, I'm going to plead guilty. I did it, so I want you to negotiate a plea bargain. He said, well, you got to plead not guilty to give me some leverage. I said, I'm not going to do that. I knew they'd convened a grand jury in Douglas County, so I knew any day they were going to come up with an indictment. And Steve had told me that he thought it would look like 94 years based upon what I told him. And I said, go get me a plea bargain. He said, well, you're not giving me much to deal with. But I said, go get me a plea bargain. So he came back with 5 to 22 years. And I said, oh, great, I'll take it. And he said, Skip, they're going to give you the max. And I said, fine. I mean, I did it. If you know the justice system at all, 22 years is not really 22 years. It's more like 8 to 10 years. But I was 58. So, I mean, I was getting up there. So even 10 years meant a lot to me at that time. But so I pled guilty. When you plead guilty, your bond's revoked. And the judge sentenced me on the spot, and he sentenced me to 6 years, and that was a blessing from God that I didn't recognize at the time. So I go to my jail, and you wait at the Arapahoe County Jail till there's beds at the prison, and so I go in there, and everybody's out in the big common area, and I'm the third guy in a 2-man cell, so I got a little 3-inch plastic mattress that lays on the floor, and that's where I sleep. On the jail cell, and I ask around who my two cellies are, that's short for cellmates. They point to these two guys over in the corner. One's this humongous Hispanic with tattoos everywhere, arms bigger than my legs. And you could tell he'd been in and out of prison. The other was an older gentleman. You could tell it had a rough life. So I go over, introduce myself, put up my hand to shake their hands, and they ignore me. So I just go sit down by the TV, and this is where God again starts blessing. God chose big black men to be my angels. Why, to this day, I do not know. But this black gentleman came and sat down next to me, and after a couple minutes said, looks like you could have a problem tonight. And I said, yeah, I'm thinking I may. And he said, well, do you know why? And I knew a little bit about prison, and I knew they thought any old guy that came to prison, they immediately thought you were a pedophile.
Oh.
And so I said, yeah, they think I'm a pedophile. And this gentleman's said, well, look, I can tell you're not. You're some white-collar criminal, first-time offender. He said, why don't you let me go take care of this for you? And I said, and another thing I knew is you never wanted to be beholden to anybody in prison or jail, because when they call it in, no matter what they call, you have to do it. And I said, no, I'll take care of it. Well, he said, don't worry about it. And he went over and talked to him. About 10 minutes later, to this day, I don't know what he said. They came over, introduced themselves. I never had a problem with them. Never had a problem. So you go from the jail, you go to reception center, which is in Denver here, where they give you physical, psychological tests. And they have a point system. The greater the points, the more risk you are, and therefore the more secure the prison. So after about 7 days there, I meet with my case manager, and he opens my file. Obviously, he hadn't seen it before, and he starts laughing. And I said, I'm glad you think this is funny.
Right.
And he said, no, no, no. He said, I've never seen this. And you get, like, if it's a violent crime, you get more points. Or if there's a multiple crimes like mine, you get points. But you also get credit. Like, if it's your first time, you get negative points and so on. He said, you have negative points. I don't know what you're doing here. And I said, well, I'll be glad to leave. And he said, no. He said, no, I can't let you do that, but don't worry, I'll take care of you. So next day, I'm shackled by my wrists and my ankles and put in this bus, travel like that for about 6-7 hours. I'm the last guy off the bus, and I show up at what's called Skyline, which is a correctional facility in Canyon City. It sits up high on a mesa, and there's from that facility, you can see 9 other prisons.
Oh, my God.
So it's just, and the sad part is it's surrounded by mountains looking over the Arkansas River Valley. It's God's beautiful creation marred by all these prisons. But so I go in there and.
Was this like a very low security?
Yeah, it was dormitory. There was no walls. There were no fences. And I had a room with a roommate. And I go in there, and I want to take a shower so bad, but I don't have shower slippers, and I don't want to go in there because I know I'm going to catch something as soon as I go in the shower. And there's just another big black man in the room next to me, Wayne Brown. I says, you probably need a new pair of shower slippers. And I said, man, I could use them. And again, I was worried about what this was going to cost me, but he said, here they are. And I said, well, I'll pay you back. So don't worry about it. So the athletic facilities are beautiful. Football field, softball field, outdoor handball, volleyball, it's just gorgeous track. And I'm an early riser, so I got up about 6 and started running the track, not paying any attention. At one end of the football field were about 10 or 12 black inmates. The other end were about 10 or 12 Hispanic inmates. And there was a black inmate and a Hispanic inmate slowly walking around the track, sometimes talking, sometimes yelling at each other. I'm just running the track, ignoring it all. And about third time around, Wayne Brown yells out, Star, get your blankety blank blank over here. And I said, I'm running the track. He said, get over here now. I go over there. He grabs me, pushes me, pulls me through the door. He says, you stupid fish, you're not going to make it a day in here. And I said, all I'm doing is running the track. I said, what's wrong with that? And he said, you see those two guys out there? If they don't reach an agreement, there's going to be a fight. And both of those gangs are armed to the hilt.
Oh my gosh, the
only white man out there. Who the hell do you think they're going to take it out on first? And he pushed me in my room and said, don't come out till I tell you it's safe. So, you know, God was blessing me the whole time. And so then I got it. When I got my job offer and I said I'd take it, so the next morning I go to my job to be the accountant for the farm. I guess I didn't say that on the air, but I was offered the job as accountant on the farm, and they were in trouble. They were having an audit, so I said I'd help them. I had no choice. And so I go, and my office is in the old farm house building. And I go in there, and who's there but Wayne Brown, the gentleman that helped me 2 days earlier. And I said, do you have something to do with this? And he said, well, I couldn't let an accountant and attorney do pots and pans. And so he had helped me get that job.
That's great.
And so and there was a beautiful chapel right next to the...
And this is all before, really, you've had an experience and
I didn't credit it to God at all. I thought this was just my great fortune, you know? And so there's a chapel right next door, and the chaplain, Bob Walker, didn't know him, didn't go to the chapel. I was doing stuff like I was helping... I set up GED classes. I was helping inmates in the facility, and he'd heard about it and came to talk to me one day and said, why aren't you coming to chapel? It's obviously you're a good person. And the second night I had been in jail waiting to go to prison, I got a letter from my brothers. And my brothers had told me, basically the letter started saying, Skip, we don't want anything. Now, my brothers had lost money due to my fraud. So, I mean... they said, you know, and we've always been a super close family. We don't want anything to do from you. We don't want to hear from you. When you get out, we don't want you to contact us or your mother. And they said, the night you were sentenced, we told our mother that you were going to prison and she had a stroke. And she's lost her short-term memory. And that's on you. Mm. So I went to prison, and my mom and I were super close. So, I went to prison suicidal. I joke about it now, but... I could not handle the fact that I had hurt my mother like that. And he would come, and I told him about it, and I said, until I can forgive myself, I can't ask God to forgive me. And he said, Skip, you got it so backwards. He said, you ask God to forgive you. You accept Jesus as your Savior, and you'll find the peace inside of yourself to forgive yourself. And I said, well, I'm sorry, and I just can't do it. And so I continued to help guys, and it was Christmas Eve of 2000. I was sentenced in May of 2005. It was Christmas Eve of 2005, and he came to my door and wanted me to come to chapel. And we had talked. We had developed a little friendship, and I'd go to the chapel because they gave free cards for birthdays, and so I'd go there for that. But that was all I went for. So. And I told him I'd go this one time, and then we would not talk about it again. And so I went, and the moment I walked through the door, I mean, physically, I could just feel the guilt, the shame. It just left me. And I was in tears. After the service, Bob and his wife, Deb, prayed with me, and that night I accepted Jesus as my Savior. And the reality is prison was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. I mean, if I had to do it again, I'd go to prison again in a heartbeat if I came out believing in Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's, you know, that I hear that story. We have mutual friends, and of course, that have had that same experience, and I hear that story. For those that are just tuned in, this is You Get the Blessing, and I'm Bob Belts, and here with the actual host. I'm the co-host, C. Chuck.
So that's
you're
right.
Sitting in the host
chair. That's right. I am Bo Mitchell.
The host,
today.
Chuck King, and our guest is Skip Starr, and with a great story. And we'll turn the corner a little bit.
Sure.
And tell us a little bit then from that point, how did you get to doing what you're doing now?
Well, I became convicted very quickly that God wanted me to be involved in prison ministry. I mean, I had a great life. I had a great education. I had a great family. The men I was in prison with, 99% of them never experienced any of that. They came from broken homes. They came from abuse situations. They came from no education situations. I tried to help them while I was there by classes and so on, but I felt convicted that no matter... and Skyline was minimum security. A lot of these guys went from there out into the world, and they weren't prepared. They couldn't make it there. And I felt God convicting me that when I got out, that's what I needed to do. And so from there, I went to a halfway house, and halfway houses are terrible places. I thought it was going to be, you know, help me transition, which they try to do. I mean, the people operating really try it, but the staff are poorly paid, and therefore they sometimes sell drugs on the side, sell sex on the side. They're a lot of them are privately owned. Most of them are privately owned. So you have to start paying rent day one. So if you get too far behind in rent, even if you hadn't committed another crime, violated any rules, you're back in prison. Because they expect you to get a job and pay their rent. And,
but you've got to do that on your own. They're not really helping you that much.
Not very much at all. I mean, they have certain services that they'll give you information about and certain jobs they post when they hear about them. But no. And their rules are such that it makes it you only have so much time to travel, and you have to travel by bus. You can't use cars. You can't have friends drive you, or bicycle, which is what I did most of the time. And in my case, with a resume, even though I tried to dummy it down as much as I could and couldn't lie, so, you know, I go to places and, well, you're an accountant and attorney. We don't have anything for you. You're not going to be satisfied being picking up garbage. I said, I'll do anything, you know. And finally, I convinced a Safeway checker or Safeway store to let me be a checker. And when I owned the banks, they wouldn't let me near the teller drawers because I was the world's worst teller. I could never balance a drawer afterwards. So I finally got a job there. But so once I got out of the halfway house, and I went to Cherry Hills, and I'll never forget it. I went to the Tuesday morning men's group and first, and Gary Vaughn, an elder there, grabbed me and said, "You're new, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." He introduced himself. "You need to sit at this table." I've been sitting at that table for 5 years. I do two Bible studies with those men. We have 20 men now that do a New Testament Bible study, 7 a.m. Wednesday, Old Testament Bible study, 6 o'clock a.m. Thursday. And those men have helped me grow so much. And, you know, everyone says Cherry Hills is so big, and it is. And that bigness also brings some opportunities, but it can be really small, too. And
true in every church, isn't it? You really need that small group and relationship.
Yes. Skip, listen, before time gets away from us, tell us about your ministry and how we can help you.
Basically, my ministry is Shining Star Ministry. I'm involved in helping several ministries. I work with Youth for Christ on an incredible program that we started, working a sports performance program in the juvenile jails, followed by most of those kids go to alternative high schools, where we bring a church to partner with the alternative high school and work with those kids. We also coordinate with the probation department because 55% of those kids go back for probation violations. We started our first alternative high school, Colorado Charter High School in 11th and Osage. I also help raise money for other ministries. For instance, we started a for-profit company, brought in an investor, where we do fix and flips. The investor then, all the profits go to Strong Tower Ministries. Some go to me. Some go to other ministries. And then the investor buys another home. We flip it again. We employ ex-offenders to do the fix and flip, fixing in the homes. Have a radio show of my own with two other ex-offenders. It's called Unchained Angels. We do it 5 to 6 on Tuesdays and Thursdays, dealing with prison issues, letting people understand, loved ones, what prison is really like. It's Christian-based, and bring in guests that are Christians now, have similar testimonies in some way to mine.
Tell our listeners if they want more information. You have a website or a phone number, and how people can get in touch with you and help in any way that they can.
Volunteers, money, anything. ShiningStarMinistries.com. And my number
is www?
Yes, www.org, not .com. And my number is 303-517-6767.
Say it
again. So that is www. Okay. Shining Star, ShiningStar ministry.org.
Yes, sir. Great. And it's 303-517-6767.
What a great ministry. What a great testimony, Skip. One of the things that impresses me most about you is your humility and your admission. So many people in your circumstances try to explain things away, and I really appreciate your life and what you're doing now.
And thanks for being with us today. We really, you know, sometimes you got to work real hard and, you know, drawing things out of people. And we just, you just took off, and it made our job easy today. But we really appreciate you being with us. And And Chuck, thanks for you being here today and hosting. And
good to be here.
And for all of you out there listening, I hope you'll keep tuning in to You Get the Blessing. And you can go to our website, pick up some of those, the old shows we've done, and hope that you'll be back with us next week.
And if you didn't get the information about Shining Star, you can find it on our website.
God bless.